Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I've been meaning for quite a time to tell you about something about 9/11 that I uncovered after the event, after I looked into my old database in 2022. And that will be the subject of today's video. I just want to start out by quickly discussing prediction, because for most of my life, I was, let's say, spiritual, meaning I didn't go to church, but I had all these beliefs. And my beliefs were pretty much in line with a lot of the Christian type of stuff, like the end times and all that sort of thing. But I was looking for these prophecies and predictions to come true. And I was always trying to interpret the future and to interpret what I'm seeing in line with my apocalyptic views, because I was quite convinced that America was going to be nuked, and that World War III was going to be a nasty nuclear game between Russia and America, and Russia was going to come out the winner. And I see that there are still many people who believe these things, even though the chance of these things happening now is almost non-existent. But back in the 1970s, even earlier, the 1960s, the 1970s, even the 1980s, there was a much greater chance of nuclear war happening. And you can just go and have a look at the statistics of the number of nuclear weapons and the things that Russia and America were doing. And it was pretty hectic stuff. Wild, wild stuff compared to the tameness of this modern time that we live in. Anyhow, I was always looking at the future and looking to see at what point is Russia going to win, at what point is Russia going to destroy America, and then the Western world is totally buggered. And of course, the Europeans would all be conquered by the Russians, and the Europeans would live under communism, and they'd never be able to escape. And for me, this whole belief in prophecy reached its crescendo in the 1990s, specifically with the year 1999, because that had to do with the stupid things that I was believing at the time. And interestingly enough, the turning of the year 2000, followed by 9/11, 9/11 kind of helped to keep the belief a little bit alive. But after 9/11, as the years went by, that is when I started letting go of all this prophecy nonsense that I believed in. Even now, I try to divine what the future holds, and I'm constantly analyzing to see what I can find out and guess about the future. But the difference is that back then, I was always trying to fit the future to these apocalyptic prophecies. Whereas now I look at things and I don't have apocalyptic prophecies that I'm trying to fit the facts to. And so I'm just looking to see what is likely based on what I'm seeing. But I must tell you that by about 2003, that was when my real faith in the apocalyptic stuff started disappearing. Because for me, 1999 and the year 2000 was the key to the apocalypse. And if it didn't happen in those years, then I was going to just toss the thing aside, finally, for once and for all. And that's what I did. And trying to guess the future is a very difficult thing. I've kept all my books, all my crazy books from the past. I've got the whole lot because there are interesting and weird bullshit in there that is useful. And even the other day when I dashed off to go and get books from the lawyer that had died, Michael, who I still want to talk about. When I went through Michael's books, I found a lovely book which was a book of predictions. I myself have got entire books of predictions from the past. A book that I have is a book with psychics, all these psychics predicting the future. And what a bunch of crap that is. But it's wonderful because it's worth keeping, and I at some point will want to show you some of the crap that people used to just say. But the book that I got out of Michael's collection that was pretty cool was a proper book of experts predicting the future. Experts. There are even some of those experts that I know a lot about. And it was fascinating to read what those experts were saying in the early 1980s. And these are people who are, in many cases, at the top of their game, trying to predict politics of the future, wars of the future, as well as technological things, including computer stuff. For example, I was looking through the book after I had got it from Michael. I was just browsing through it, and I got to tell you this one particular prediction that I saw on technology. And the prediction was that we will have clothes, like electronic clothes, and we'll be able to change the colors on those clothes at will. And that these clothes, we'll be wearing these clothes by the early 1990s. And these predictions were from the early 1980s. So this was like just 10 years before, hey? And I was laughing at that stuff. And one day I must grab that book and just talk you through a couple of examples of predictions by experts. And those experts made those predictions just a couple of years before, like 10 years earlier. And you'd be amazed how wrong they were. But if you think the experts were bad, the psychics were even worse. The psychics just talk all kinds of shit. And at a point in the past, on African Crisis, when I got my African Crisis website going, for a period of time, I was so fascinated by us discussing politics and what is to come, and this is now round about the year 2005, I was so fascinated by all these people arguing with me and me saying stuff, etc., that I even wrote software because I had a plan to go and capture prophecies up front. I wanted to have a scientific method of assessing things because I began to realize that after an event has occurred, then everybody comes out and they say, oh, well, you know, I predicted this and he predicted that and here it is now. But in actual fact, they are all suffering from 20/20 hindsight. And what I wanted was I wanted to have a mechanism where we write down and record the prophecy beforehand with a date, with a statement of what it is, and by when it's going to occur. So in this case, the predictions were going to be like political predictions and economic predictions and predictions of wars, etc. And I actually wrote the software to start capturing this. And the idea was that I was going to capture these things as they came up, as we discussed and argued, and as I was interacting with people on my website. I was going to capture these things in a database with a date and a statement and saying, this is what the prediction is, this is who has said it, this is by when it's going to occur. And I actually started recording these things for a little while. But then after some time, after observing this for some time, I came to a realization. And you'll be shocked to know what my realization was. I began to realize that 99% of the things that we think are going to happen will not happen. They'll not happen at all. And when I came to that conclusion after starting to run this prediction experiment. I then lost further interest and I didn't capture any more stuff. And as the years have gone by, I've realized that, yeah, a person is wrong most of the time. If you actually start making very specific statements, you are going to be so freaking wrong. And nowadays, I will tell everybody that, you know what? The future is a clean slate. The future is unknown. Nobody on earth knows the future. And the future is a clean slate on which any one of us can write. And to me, that is actually the best news of all. And the more I watch things, and the more I watch how the world twists and turns, and how quickly politics can change, and how easily things are driven by individual people, by specific countries, by this particular group or that particular group, I nowadays don't even worry about the future. I know that the future is a clean slate that can be written on. But there are serious people who've tried to predict the future. And if you start looking at predictions of the future versus what actually happened, and that's a topic that I'll touch on again, because there are things from the past that I want to show you about how whites used to think and how the world is really not the way that whites expected it to be. Now, one Englishman that I have quite a lot of respect for is a guy called Arthur C. Clarke. Arthur C. Clarke is actually a guy who was a scientist, but he then started writing science fiction. However, Arthur C. Clarke is remembered as basically being the guy who came up with the idea of satellites in space, the communications satellite in particular. But Arthur C. Clarke used to investigate all kinds of weird things, and he would apply his scientific mind. And he wasn't a bad guy at all. He wasn't a charlatan. He was a white guy who really tried to figure things out and to make truthful statements, as opposed to Jews who are lying sacks of shit. But us whites in our normal state, we're interested in reality. So here is an interesting quote from Arthur C. Clarke, and it says, "Trying to predict the future is a discouraging and hazardous occupation. If by some miracle a prophet could describe the future exactly as it was going to take place, his predictions would sound so absurd that people, everyone, would laugh him to scorn. The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. So, if what I say now seems to you to be very reasonable, then I will have failed completely. Only if what I tell you appears absolutely unbelievable have we any chance of visualizing the future as it really will happen." The one thing that I want to comment about what Arthur C. Clarke says is where he says, "The only thing we can be sure about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic." And I must tell you that with regard to the European people and to what our race can achieve, that is something I totally concur with. I don't know what the future will be, but I want to tell you that as long as whites are busy creating that future is going to be stunning. It's going to be absolutely incredible. And even the current situation where we've got the impact of the degenerates like Jews and blacks, the fact of the matter is that all the progress that has really taken place came on the backs of whites. Whether it was inventions by Germans, inventions by Americans, inventions by French or Italians or British, but all the good stuff that we have comes from European people, period. So what I want to do today is I actually want to focus on some things that indicate foreknowledge. Not this 2020 hindsight nonsense, but something that I can point to, that I can say, you know what, that does show that there is some kind of foreknowledge. And in this case, we're looking for foreknowledge of 9/11. So when I first spoke to Alex Linder back in 2015, when he and I were on Twitter, and Alex Linder was talking about the fact that 9/11 was done by the Jews, etc. And I asked Alex some questions because Alex was talking about explosions and stuff. And back then in 2015, I was still totally believing the storyline that Muslim terrorists had done 9/11. And then Alex Linder said to me, no, you must go and look up this guy called Chris Bolin, and Chris Bolin will tell you all the stuff. And I went and I looked and I started digging, not just into Chris Bolin's stuff, but also other stuff like the wonderful work done by the architects. And I just about fell on my back when I realized, good God, 9/11 was actually a freaking crazy inside job. The whole thing was a staged event. It's crazy, crazy wild. But even in the case of a guy like Chris Bolin, Chris Bolin did not go and predict this before it happened. He did not write a book before it happened. He wrote a book after it happened. And then in the book he said that, well, German intelligence, the Germans knew that it was the Mossad. So that's kind of 20/20 hindsight. Yes, it is inside knowledge with valuable insights that is critical to us understanding what happened, but neither the Germans nor Chris Bolin actually published anything before it happened. And so it's always very interesting to go hunting and seeing, can one find something that was published beforehand that shows some kind of foreknowledge? Now, the thing that most people focus on is that Netanyahu, the Polish Jew Netanyahu, who's the Prime Minister of Israel, he and his father wrote some kind of book in about 1979 where they were talking about how Israel needs a Pearl Harbor type of incident. Now, I've never seen that book. I assume it's written maybe in their stupid Jewish languages. I don't know. But if anyone can ever find a English translation of that book or any kind of writings or analysis that go back to that book, I'm very interested. I'd love to actually read that thing or read something more that this Netanyahu Jewish snake wrote. So all I know is that much, but I've never actually seen anything in writing, and I'd love to get anything. Obviously, the Jews have been scouring the internet and removing every damn thing, plus you don't know what language it was written in. Anyhow, if anyone ever finds more data on this, please let me know and help me to find more information. I'm very curious what these Jewish snakes were thinking. This doesn't surprise me because I used to watch Larry King Live, the Jew Larry King Live, a lot in the 1990s here in South Africa, and Netanyahu was one of his regulars on the show, and I had quite a lot of time to assess Netanyahu. And he struck me as a particularly clever Jew and a particularly devious and nasty kind of a guy. Anyhow, here is a very short little video excerpt. I don't know where they cut this out of, but this was apparently from 1995. And in here, in 1995, Netanyahu actually talks about how the World Trade Center could be brought down by terrorists. Isn't that an amazing piece of foreknowledge? Again, like with the book, if anyone knows where this came out of so that one could see the rest of it, that would be interesting. But this is an example of some true foreknowledge. This is not normal.
Well, I was getting this question in the 1990s, and I said that the West really doesn't understand militant Islam. So I wrote a book in 1995, and I said that if the West doesn't wake up to the suicidal nature of militant Islam, the next thing you'll see is the militant Islam is bringing down the World Trade Center. I said that the West really doesn't understand militant Islam. So I wrote a book in 1995, and I said that if the West doesn't wake up to the suicidal nature of militant Islam, the next thing you'll see is the militant Islam is bringing down the World Trade Center.
So there, in his own words, is the Jew Netanyahu. And boy, what an accurate prediction that was, hey? So that was from 1995. And I don't think you'll ever find anything as accurate as that, almost ever, in anything. But as we now know, Jews will create the event that they need. These people will create the lies that they need. And notice the way that he phrases it. He says, the West does not understand militant Islam. So in other words, the Jew is telling the whites that they don't understand something. And the Jew comes and creates the event to fool the whites into believing that they made a mistake. Keep that kind of weird Jewy thinking in the back of your mind. That thing comes up again and again, where the Jew tells the whites that the whites don't know what they're doing, or that the whites are making a mistake, when in fact the whites aren't making a mistake and the whites do know better. But the Jew needs to fool the whites for a time. In this case, they needed to fool the whites in order to go and kill millions of Muslims. Here on the screen is another interesting quote. I was hunting for this as well for quite a time. All I have is this screenshot, and this also comes from someone else after the event, but it comes from a president, former Italian president Francesco Cossiga, on 9/11. And the quote is, all the intelligence services of America and Europe know well that the disastrous attack had been planned and realized by the Mossad in order to blame the Arabic countries and convince the Western powers to take part in Iraq and Afghanistan. At least what's nice about this one is that we have the president of a major Western country actually openly talking about this. But I've not seen more on this, but this is very interesting. So between Chris Bolin and guys like this, we now know that definitely that the intelligence services, in other words the spies in the Western world, actually knew that something was afoot. And they knew it before it happened. But getting proof of this coming out before it happened, that is very difficult. And I've never been able to come up with something. But I'm going to show you the best that I can come up with. So let me explain what I found and how I found it. Last year, in the beginning of 2022, as I was doing more South African related stuff, I began to think to myself that I really need to haul out my old African crisis website, because it had been down for about a decade and I had a lot of stuff on that old website of mine, stuff that I've never seen ever again, and many things that I used to discuss and talk about and that we used to look at, which is now totally forgotten. So I did an exercise which was my first ever attempt to get all my old stuff out. And my website had existed for many years, and I'd written it and I'd made changes to the database. So for a period of time, my website worked like this. Then after a couple of years, I rewrote it and it worked like that. And so I had all kinds of odds and sods, and I was trying to piece it together. But I also was struggling with PC problems at the time when I was trying to pull this thing together, and the PC that I was using was not very powerful, and I couldn't process all the data nicely. Anyway, the bottom line was that I managed to grab most of the stuff and sort of get it into a database that you can search, but it's rather ugly. And due to my computer issues at the time, I didn't want to waste the tremendous amount of hours needed to go back and fix things just in order to fix this little bit and that little bit. So what I did manage to do was I managed to find the majority of the old articles, and I managed to get 110,000 articles out. And I put it into a website that I called the Archive of AfricanCrisis.info. And so it is there, it's ugly, but you can search it. It's got 110,000 articles. And there are articles in there, many of which have completely disappeared off the internet. You'll never find them anywhere else, etc. So for people who want to do some research and digging around, you might find some interesting stuff there. And it was very interesting for me to look at my old stuff because I hadn't looked at it in a long, long time. And then I started searching around and looking at the stuff, and that's when I stumbled on some interesting things. So if you look on the screen in front of you, these are some screenshots from that time. On the right-hand side there is a screenshot from the Wayback Machine. I used to have two different domains. I had AfricanCrisis.org, which was the original one. Later, I had AfricanCrisis.com. But this was my first attempt at getting something up and running on African Crisis. And I actually only got African Crisis up and running less than a month before 9/11. So what you see on the right-hand side of the screen, all of that black and red, that is a screenshot of what my website looked like in December of 2001. So you see there I've got Crisis in Southern Africa, and there I had Robert Mugabe and Thabo Mbeki, scumbags, and they were busy destroying the white farmers in Zimbabwe, previously Rhodesia. And then further down you can see that white man sitting there on the bed, and you can see he's been beaten thoroughly. That's a white farmer from Zimbabwe who was thoroughly, thoroughly beaten by blacks. That was one of many pictures. So anyway, that'll give you an idea of what my primitive little website looked like back then. And I was starting to add articles. On the bottom left is an example of one of a number of times that my website was hacked. Back then I was pro-Israel, anti-Muslim, and my website was hacked by different people. And this is a screenshot from one of the hackings. And it says, "This site hacked by mafia hacking team." And it says, "Mazar, whatever was here from Iran just for fun." So they'd come and they'd hack my website would be totally fucked, and I have to bring it back. My website was hacked quite a few times, and quite a number of times my website was hacked, apparently from Turkey. But you don't really know whether those people really are from there. So the hacker leaves a message saying he's from Iran, or they leave messages saying they're from Turkey, but you don't really know. In the later years, my website was hacked quite a few times, where they come in and they wipe it and I have to piece it back together again. But all the times, it wasn't that bad because I had backups and I would just restore the backups and get the website up within a day or so. But it was irritating and it was kind of freaky. And in more recent years, I have been hacked. My websites have been hacked in recent years again. So it's always a battle to survive the hackings and to sort out security because you don't know who's going to nail your website and by what means they're going to nail it. But that'll give you a bit of an idea of what African crisis was like. So back in August of 2001, I had just managed to get my website up and I was starting to post some articles on my website. I think I got it up round about the middle of the month, round about the 15th or so of August. So of course I don't know that 9/11 is going to happen. I'm just busy focusing on African stuff. But because I'm always interested in war, and because I'm anti-communist and I don't trust the Russians at all, and all these blacks in Africa are very pro-Russian, I was looking out for various news, and of course, wars and violence was something I was always watching. I will still be putting out some other stuff from back then, things that people don't even know that I have. So stick around, you'll still hear about the blacks and the Russians. You're in for some interesting surprises. Anyhow, I was starting to post stuff on my website and I was going through various news and I would publish things in the same way that I do these days. And I spotted some interesting and strange news from the Russians and I read it and I posted it and I forgot about it. And about 3 weeks later, 3.5 weeks or so later, 9/11 happens. And when it happens, the first time I hear about it is from my Boer pal Gilbert. I'm at work and Gilbert sends me a text message and he says that a plane has flown into a tower in New York. But what I don't know is that this tower isn't a small tower, it isn't a thin little tower with an aerial on it. These are huge freaking buildings. Huge buildings with tens of thousands of people in them. And he sends another message saying, "Oh God, the tower has collapsed." And he's sending these messages in the afternoon because New York time is 6 hours before South African time. So when the tower collapses in the morning, it's already after 3 p.m. in the afternoon in South Africa. And he's saying, "Wow, this stuff is live on TV and it's wild." And so I only get to see it that evening when I get home. When I get home and I watch the news, because YouTube didn't exist back then, and I can't believe what I'm seeing. And because the Russians were behind the blacks and black terrorism in Africa and also in Vietnam and South America and Latin America, I was wondering whether the Russians were behind this. So I posted various articles at the time as and how data started coming out. I'm going to be discussing some of the articles from that old archive of mine, but I'm not going to go through all the stuff in all of those articles. So I will mention the articles, but in the links below the video will be the titles of the articles as well as links to the African Crisis Archive. So you can then click on these articles and go and read them. Because some of them are long, and you can go and do searching and do whatever you want. So, shortly after 9/11 had occurred, There were some things that I picked up about the Russians in the news that I posted on my website. But the most important Russian thing is something I posted early on before 9/11 happened. And it was only last year after I'd restored my archive and I was just searching around and looking to see what things I can find and what is there of interest, that I stumbled on an article that I'd posted before 9/11. And now with hindsight, this article is very interesting. So among the articles that you'll find in the link below the video is an article where the Israeli spy chief says that World War III has already begun. There is another article that I had that I thought at first of doing a video about, but when I looked at it more carefully, I decided I'm not going to do that. But the article is below, and it is an interesting article. It is an article that was published in Pravda in Russia. Now, that article was published in 2004. And it was written by a guy who was the president of a college, and he was a retired major general. So his surname is Alexander Vladimirov. Anyway, this major general, who I assume is the head of this college, maybe a military college, he writes this article about World War III starting by 2015. And he actually talks about the West, the Americans, as well as Muslim terrorism, and how the Russians will have to fight World War III on their territory inside Russia. And nowadays, when I look at the Ukraine conflict, and the fact that it's all on the border of Russia, there is some aspect of this guy's article that makes some kind of sense. So it might be of interest to some of you. And the fact that it was written in 2004 and was talking about 2015, and we know that the main problems between Ukraine and Russia started in 2014. So there's something there to be looked at. And the fact that this was a military guy talking about it, that was interesting. Then in the same article, this military guy then says something else. He says that by 2030, Russia will be fighting China. Whereas now in 2023, we are hearing that America and China might be smacking each other over Taiwan. I thought that that prediction of fighting China by 2030, again, the fact that this was written 24 years ago, is not such a bad time prediction. But the difference is that he was predicting that the Russians will be fighting the Chinese. Anyway, it's an interesting article, and I thought, given how difficult it is to predict the future, that's not bad stuff, given that this was written so long ago. But the world is already a very different place to what it was back in 2001. So much stuff has changed since then. And people have changed, and whites have changed, and Americans have changed. So last year, when I was looking through lots of old stuff on African crisis, I came across this particular post that I posted on my website on the 19th of August, 2001. And you can see a screenshot of the top part of it on the screen in front of you. And basically, it says, Russia projects a Middle East war within 6 months. So Russia projects a Middle East war within 6 months. In actual fact, I made an error when I was posting it. You can see I was doing like a quick rush job. The actual title had within, but the word within ended with a G, and I didn't even spot the error that I'd made. And so it shows you that I just quickly looked at this thing, read it, and I thought, yeah, no, this is cool. And I went and I posted it. So you can see the original post date was the 19th of August 2001, posted by Jan. You can even see the time there. It was early in the morning, 3:26 a.m. And this thing that I posted came from a website called worldtribune.com. But I didn't post an actual URL below it. So I can't remember exactly where I got it from, whether someone emailed it to me or how I found it, but it came from a website called worldtribune.com, and that website no longer exists. So let me read what this thing says, and then you'll see why I think that this shows some definite foreknowledge on the part of the Russians. So although I posted it on August the 19th, the original article was on August the 13th. So it was about 2 days short of a month before 9/11. And this is what it says. Moscow, Russian defense officials and strategists project that an Arab-Israeli war could erupt in the Middle East over the next 3 to 6 months. The widely held scenario described a war that would engulf Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria, according to Middle East Newsline. The officials and strategists said Egypt could be swept into such a conflict. "We are moving inexorably toward a war," a senior Russian diplomat said. Now listen to this. Russia has tried and the United States has tried to stop this, but to no avail. So just let's pause there for a second. There is going to be an Arab-Israeli war. Russia has tried to stop it. America has tried to stop it. But the Jews are intent on having this war. It continues, Russian strategist Yevgeny Stanovsky agreed. Stanovsky, head of the Moscow-based Middle East Institute, said, "A regional war is inevitable in wake of the failure of international efforts to implement a ceasefire." Now, up to this point, you might not be that impressed with this article. You might say, yeah, this is a bunch of general stuff. Well, listen to the next sentence. That'll show you there's something these people know. And it says, the trigger for the war could take place in September. How's that? Let's repeat that. The trigger for the war could take place in September. And we know, 9/11. So there it is. The trigger for the war could take place in September. So they just say the trigger for the war. They don't describe what it's going to be. So let's continue. The Russian analysts expect an Israeli offensive against the Palestinian Authority triggered by Palestinian bombings of Israeli cities. Such an offensive, they said, could prompt Egypt to direct its third army to enter the Sinai. The third army is scheduled to conduct an exercise near the Suez Canal next month. In London, the London-based Sunday Times said Egypt is considering sending its third army into the demilitarized Sinai Peninsula. The newspaper, quoting a senior Egyptian security source, said on Sunday that Cairo would send in the army if Israel moves into Palestinian territories. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, the newspaper said, has come under increasing pressure to help the Palestinians. The Times said Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat said Egypt has committed itself to helping the Palestinians against any Israeli attack. In Cairo, Arab League chief Amr Moussa warned of an impending catastrophe in the Middle East. So that's an interesting sentence. In Cairo, Arab chief Amr Moussa warned of an impending catastrophe in the Middle East. Moussa said all efforts to prevent a regional breakdown appear to have resulted in failure. On Wednesday, the Arab League convenes in emergency session to plan a public relations strategy. So that's also a pretty impressive sentence there. It shows that there's like a serious emergency and everybody at a high level knows about it. Here it talks about the Arab League, and the Arab League is convening emergency sessions. The Russians know there's big problems. The Americans know there's a big problem. So just that sentence again. On Wednesday, the Arab League convenes emergency session to plan a public relations strategy. The meeting will be attended by the League's new spokeswoman, Palestinian legislator Hanan Ashrawi. Egypt plans to launch a campaign to recruit international pressure against Israel. This will include Israel's closure of Palestinian institutions in Jerusalem. For their part, Israeli officials said the threat of a regional war that would involve Egypt has been discussed in numerous forums. They said Mubarak has been giving orders to bolster Egypt's military readiness while he continues to be wary of Israel's strength. Egypt is the most hostile country to Israel within the international community, and it should be treated as an enemy state. National Infrastructure Minister Avigdor Lieberman said, "This man passionately wants the destruction of Israel, but he knows he would lose in the event of an all-out war. This is why he is trying to destroy us piecemeal." On Sunday, Syria held high-level military talks with China. Syrian Chief of Staff General Ali Azlan met a Chinese military delegation on a visit to Damascus. Syrian sources said the two sides discussed ways to promote military relations. U.S. officials said China has renewed missile component and technology exports to Syria and other Arab and Middle Eastern countries. So that's the whole article. So the article is talking about how Israel is going to be attacking the Arabs. But in actual fact, it's America that's attacking the Muslims. And if you go and you look up what happened, I see that the first military action by America was a thing called Operation Enduring Freedom. The military phase began on October 7th, 2001. So, on 11th of September, the towers are brought down. But less than a month later, America is already busy fighting in the Middle East. The full-on invasion of Iraq only takes place in March 2003, but America is already busy bombing and carrying on all over the show and taking all kinds of military action. And the thing that I noticed at the time was, isn't this interesting that Israel is sitting quietly and America is doing all the stuff around Israel? And I thought to myself, that is so lucky for Israel, without even realizing that, you know, this could be something that was planned. So this article is wrong when it says that Israel is going to be attacking and fighting all these other countries. But in all other respects, it's very close. And this talk that the trigger event would occur in September, that blew my mind. And the term they use for it is the trigger event. And this was an exclusive on this World Tribune website where it's talking about what the Russians are saying is going to happen. So it's interesting that they're talking about how the Israelis are absolutely determined that they're going to go to war against these Muslims and that this cannot be stopped. Nobody has been able to stop it. The Russians have tried, the Americans have tried, the Arabs are trying, everyone's trying to keep the peace, but the peace just can't be kept. And the next thing you know is kaboom. The Twin Towers go down, and it's not Israel attacking, it's America attacking. How weird is that, hey? But let me show you some other articles from that time that caught my eye. The next article that caught my eye, which you can read at the links below, is this one, which I published on the 16th of September 2001. In other words, 5 days after 9/11. 5 days after 9/11, there's this article on Newsmax.com, and the article says, Russia knew a financial attack was going to happen. The full title is Expert. Russia knew in advance, encouraged citizens to cash out of dollars, by Dr. Alexander Nemets. This was published on September 17th, 2001, which basically means I was time traveling because I published it on the 16th. So there's some date-time problem there. But anyhow, you can see that we're looking at about 6 days after 9/11. So let me just read a little bit of the top here from Newsmax. And it says, Russian press accounts and other activities by the Russian government this summer indicate that the Russians knew in advance that something would happen to America, including a, quotes, financial attack against the U.S. Listen to this. During the past 3 months, Russian media and officials have encouraged citizens to cash out of U.S. dollars pending an economic collapse there after an attack. Currently, the dominant view of the media is that the terrorist actions in New York City and Washington were just a bolt from the blue sky. Could it be? So what was happening in this article, and I'm not going to go through all of it, is that we were wondering if the Russians were behind 9/11, and that's the angle that Newsmax was going after. And in this Newsmax article, it went to say the following. It said, consider the July 12, 2001, page 1 report in Pravda, still considered the establishment voice of Russia's old guard communists who control the military and intelligence services. The Pravda article was titled, The dollar and America will fall down on August 19th. That's the opinion of Dr. Tatiana Koryagina, who very accurately predicted the August default in 1998. So just going back to this, they are quoting an article that was published in Pravda on the 12th of July. In other words, almost exactly 2 months before 9/11. And the article is talking about the dollar and America falling down on August 19th, which is the exact same day when I published that other thing from Russia. Now, the difference there is that this particular person, Koryagina, is talking about economic collapse and not terrorism. So it is kind of strange that the Russians are talking about an American collapse, but that it has a timeline that is very close to what really happened. Did Russians on the inside behind these stories, did they know more? Now, the final thing that I found interesting on my old website is Vladimir Putin himself, because Putin was in the KGB, now known as the FSB, but that's basically the CIA of the Russians. On YouTube, I went and looked, and I actually found a short video which was Putin's first statement after 9/11. And you can go and find it on YouTube. And it's all in Russian, so I couldn't understand it. But below it is a translation of what he's talking about. And he is busy addressing his various ministers. But what Putin is talking about is he's talking about terrorism. Ah, this terrorism that's occurred and all this terrorism that's going on, you know, after 9/11. So Putin doesn't mention Israel. He's talking in the same vein that the Americans are about this whole terrorist problem. But there is something else that I came across on my African Crisis archive. And it's something that I published a year later. And it's called 9/11 and Putin's Strange Warning Beforehand. And again, it's a long rambling article, but I want to just read the key part of this, because this was something that I spotted in a video. Unfortunately, I don't have that video anymore, and if anyone can ever find this video, this would be very interesting. So let me read what I wrote in that article. And it says this, and this is me writing this. The whole article was written by me. I wrote, "The real piece of information I heard, which just stuck in my mind, came from the mouth of Vladimir Putin himself." Putin was interviewed extensively. Putin said that a week before 9/11, he was talking to Bush, George Bush, on the phone, and he said to Bush that he had a, quotes, ominous feeling something was going to happen, something which had been planned for a long time. Those were Putin's words as best I could remember them. That stuck in my mind. Leaders of nations are not psychic and do not get feelings about things. Putin went on to say that after 9/11, he did not want to say, "I told you so," because that was not appropriate behavior after such a disaster. This once again affirmed Putin's supposed foreknowledge of the event. So let me just tell you where I picked that stuff up. So this will give you an idea of what the video is that I saw. And this is what I wrote. "A few days ago, here in South Africa, we had a two-hour documentary about George Bush's war on terror. I missed the opening, but from what I could make out, it originated from Channel 4 in England." So it was in this documentary about George Bush's war on terror from Channel 4, it was in that documentary that we have this story where Putin talks, and Putin says that a week before 9/11, he was talking to Bush on the phone, and he said to Bush that he had an ominous feeling something was going to happen, something which had been planned for a long time. And that's as best I could remember by memory of what I saw on that documentary. If anyone can ever come across that and find that, that would be interesting, because Putin himself, in his own words, acknowledges that he knew something was going to happen, and he even warned Bush, but he warned him in a vague way. He said, oh, something ominous is going to happen. So that's the best that I can say from my sources, that there is some kind of proof from other sources that they knew something was going to happen. But it could easily be that, just like that Italian president says, that the actual spies and the actual military people knew all along that the Mossad is planning this stuff, but they don't come out and tell you in public. So there is talk about things are going to happen, and this thing is here and that thing is there, but they don't tell that Israel might be behind it. Maybe there are some that don't really know that Israel is going to be behind it, but there definitely seems to be a lot of information here. And I was quite stunned by that thing where that World Tribune article spoke about the trigger event happening in September. That blew my mind. And there are all the dates of when those things were published. It was published less than a month before 9/11. But it's very interesting to see that Israel, the Jews, were absolutely determined for this, quotes, war to go ahead against these Muslims. But it's very, very fascinating that there's all this other talk and diplomatic activity before 9/11. That Russia's running around trying to keep the peace in the Middle East. That America is running around trying to keep the peace in the Middle East. That the Muslims themselves know that there is an emergency. And everybody knows that Israel is the one that wants war. But it seems as though not everybody knows how it's going to happen. They don't know how the trigger is going to occur, what the trigger is. So maybe the Europeans knew. Maybe the Germans knew. Maybe they knew exactly what it was. Maybe even the Russians. Because the fact that the Russians are saying the trigger event is going to be in September. But there's some weird stuff here. And this is the best that I can find that to me is written proof that something was going down. And doesn't this lend quite a strange, weird story and weird twist to this 9/11 thing? So while they are busy sneaking around inside America, preparing the towers and setting all those things up for blowing it up, etc., there's all this weird diplomatic activity that's going on. And I never heard anybody talk about all this weird diplomatic activity. And I myself, after 9/11 occurred, I forgot that I'd even published this freaking news piece. But I think it should be clear that the Russians, including Putin himself, they knew some kind of shit was up. Maybe they didn't know exactly, but they knew a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of stuff that they knew and they were talking about. If anyone ever comes across any other video footage or written stuff, or the stuff that Netanyahu wrote, any kind of other stuff that indicates that there was foreknowledge of 9/11, I'd be interested. Because foreknowledge is a hard thing to come by. But I thought that when I looked at that article again, I thought to myself, there's something there. And that was a World Tribune special report. So they were very proud of publishing it, whoever they were. But the fact that they say the trigger event could happen in September, now there's something for you. So there's a little bit more to what these Jews were up to. And why were these Jews making all these weird diplomatic moves in the Middle East? Why was there this whole emergency in the Middle East? What was the purpose of that? It also gives you a little bit of input into how the world really works. So it shows you that the Russians and the Americans were trying to keep the peace, as were the Arabs, and that there's a lot of diplomacy that's going on that you don't hear about. Again, I will repeat, it is very important that people realize how much secret stuff goes on. And it's the common man and woman in the street who haven't got a clue about the real stuff that's going on. All the real stuff in the world happens behind the scenes. And Jewry makes a big issue out of getting deep in behind the scenes. And so this puts the common white person in the Western world at a big disadvantage. You don't know what is happening with these governments, what all these people are doing behind the scenes. They're flying around, they're meeting, they're having telephone calls with each other, and you don't know any of these things that are being discussed. To you, it's like life is just carrying on as normal. And this is also a disadvantage that we in Southern Africa faced, in Rhodesia and in South Africa. There are many things that were going on that we, the common citizens who lived here in the midst of our little wars, that we ourselves did not know what was going on. And we only discovered it like 10, 20 and more years later. And that kind of stuff is going down all the time. And, you know, here is all this talk of, oh, Western democracy, Western democracy. But you know what? The common man and woman don't know a tenth of what is really going on. It's all classified, it's military secrecy, it's government secrecy, and you don't really know what's going on. And that makes it really hard also for the common man to participate in some of the higher level stuff that is going on in the West. And I'm very convinced that Jews have got the big edge on whites, because Jews are in on all this secret shit. They're always busy spying, they're always busy liaising with people, and they've got all kinds of contacts high up in the West and in important positions in government, in business, etc. And so the Jews know tons of stuff that the common man will never know. And the Jews are acting on it, and the Jews are working in there, and you don't really know what's happening. And because you don't know what's happening, the common man is at a disadvantage, and the common man can't exercise any kind of level of control or interaction. And this is something that I've thought about a lot. And this is also true even with stuff like all these blacks from Africa, all these non-whites that are pouring into America and into Europe. There's other stuff that Jews know and the elite know that you and I are not being told. But I'll return to some of this stuff, because I think I've found pointers that show what is going on. There are other things going on with these freaking Jews, and these Jews are using their advantage in secrecy to be able to beat the common person. But hey, the Western world is supposed to be a democracy of the common white person, but clearly it isn't. Clearly there's a whole lot of other stuff going on, and the common person is always at a loss, and the common person is always behind. So, you know, how much of a democracy is there really, if this is the way that you function? Is a democracy even viable? There are many deeper questions that come out of this, because if most of what's happening is all secret and it's happening in closed boardrooms and military officers are working and spies and government officials are talking, everybody's busy, and the common person doesn't know. But the common person is supposed to vote. The common person is supposed to have some kind of say. But the common person doesn't have a say. And Jewry is moving around in areas where the common person is at a disadvantage. Jewry is sneaking around at high levels in our systems. And that is one of the key things that gives Jews an edge over the common person. And this thing bothers me because the common person, the common white person, is the real owner of democracy, is the real owner of America, is the real owner of Europe and all these Western countries. And the common person is supposed to defend these countries, is supposed to give his life in defense of these countries, but he's treated like a sack of shit. He doesn't know what's going on. But Jury is hobnobbing in all those circles. Jury is hard at work there. And Jury may even be tricking some people successfully and others not so successfully. So the Germans may well have known that it's the Mossad that's going to blow up the World Trade Center, but they just don't say a word about it. The Russians must have had quite a lot of information too when I look at this stuff, but how much did the Russians know exactly? And while there were definitely people on the inside in America, obviously Jews, but also maybe some of the people that are conniving with them, the question is, how much did each group know? Or who did the Jews fool exactly? Did the Jews, for example, fool George Bush? Did George Bush know that this was going to happen? I don't think he did. I think that there are clearly lots of people in government, in high positions, who didn't really know the full game. So the Jews know some of the game, the Jews are sharing it with some people, the Jews are fooling some successfully, but they are clearly missing others. I think the whole story of exactly who knew what, in which country, at which level, before 9/11, I think that story would be quite a story. But I don't think that that story will come out in our lifetimes. It might come out in a generation or two's time. Anyhow, I thought this was interesting and I thought it was food for thought. It might just help us to understand a little bit more of what's really going on. And if any of you find anything good, feel free to let me know about it. But the big thing to keep in mind is secrecy, secrecy, secrecy. That there's a hell of a lot of state secrecy and military secrecy in this world. And when you go out and you just look at what's sitting on YouTube, or you're just looking at what's sitting in a newspaper, or what are the talking heads on the mainstream talking about, today there was a fire over here and there was a murder over there. All those things that you're seeing in the mainstream media, those things are meaningless, they have no value. All the real stuff is secret. And all this other stuff that you see in the mainstream, it's just a bunch of entertainment shit. The real stuff that's going down, you're not even aware of it. And I think that that is a serious problem. I can't think of a solution, but it should indicate to you that in order to understand politics, there's a lot deeper stuff that you have to dig into. And getting to it is going to be very hard, very hard. You're going to have to kind of look around for snippets of things that somebody says that maybe they drop a hint of something somewhere. It's a hell of a story. But these freaking Jews, they're in all over the show, playing this game big time. So that's some food for thought for you.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.